This is Sibios, your source for public affairs research. A podcast from the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. Today we are talking with Professor Anu Ramaswamy of the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. Her work on sustainable infrastructure design and modeling carbon emissions has led to the adoption of policies and protocols here in the U.S. and internationally. In this podcast, we'll be talking with Professor Ramaswamy about cross-sector urban infrastructure planning for low-carbon cities. Thanks for continuing this important conversation. In a previous episode, we talked about the importance of aligning city data of carbon emissions with national data. Now we're going to spend some time talking about things that cities can do to impact city-level carbon mitigation. Can you give some examples of what cities can do to impact city-level carbon mitigation and how that compares to national policies?
Thanks for having me on this podcast, and I love talking about cities and carbon emissions. So the important takeaway here is that your strategies depend on your city type. As we just discussed in the previous podcast, cities in the U.S. are very different from cities in India or China. And also, it depends on how you count emissions. So there's a fair amount of agreement, there's actually high level of agreement that cities should count not only the direct emissions coming out of their boundary because they're burning gasoline in the tailpipe of vehicles or coal or diesel in their industries and possibly fuel and natural gas for cooking and heating, but also energy embodied in electricity that's transferred into the city from outside. So there's agreement that cities should at least count the emissions embodied in electricity. And several advanced protocols adopted globally also recommend including emissions incorporated in energy used to make building infrastructure like cement and steel. And some protocols also, as an option, allow you to look at the emissions related to food production. So these are such essential services, you know, energy supply, water supply, food supply, construction materials and transportation, you know, fuel supply. And so if you focus on these, you know, 5 to 6 sectors, you find, and one more, which is waste. There's a lot of emissions from how we deal with municipal solid waste. So these 6 to 7 sectors are actually really important in shaping the strategies. Actually, they cover all the possible strategies to reduce carbon emissions in cities. And what you prioritize depends on each city's typology. So if you had a really industrial city, many cities in China actually, their industrial emissions are so high, they're much higher than transportation. So you might focus on reducing the industrial carbon emissions first. In U.S. cities, transportation emissions are typically very high, and maybe building, heating, and cooling. And so that's what I meant by saying these 6 or 7 sectors outline all your strategy sets, and you would prioritize things based on your city typology. So now we talked about what is it that cities uniquely can do. And so as I mentioned, the national governments usually have a lot of regulatory power in setting standards for individual sectors. So typically, they'll have an industrial energy efficiency standard. They would have vehicle fuel economy standards like we have in the U.S. for our cars. But what cities can uniquely do is to think about urban infrastructure planning in a completely different way. And right now, we plan for a lot of things, but we don't completely understand that being closer together in mixed uses, including industries, thinking about industries as assets within your city rather than things to be tucked away or shunned away, and using waste resources, quote-unquote waste resources, from industries or from grocery stores even, this waste heat can be tapped into district energy systems for heating and cooling our homes and offices. And it's a tremendous leverage point for cities because it's the one single thing that can simultaneously take something that's waste, that has no other market. This low-grade heat that comes out of, you know, think about a cement plant. Think about the pulp and paper plant right here in Minneapolis. There's a lot of heat both coming out in air and the water, wastewater. If you could tap into these streams and recover that heat to heat and cool buildings, that heat virtually has no other market. And the advantage of co-locating and using these in cities is you're creating new markets for low-grade heat, displacing, in countries like India and China, you would be displacing extremely dirty coal-fired boilers. And it's very hard to regulate because you have millions of these itty-bitty boilers all over in houses, all over these cities. It's hard to regulate them, but if you created a much better way of heating and cooling cities, you've simultaneously reduced carbon emissions and reduced pollution from these boilers. So this slew of strategies, you could also take material that comes from cement factories and power plants. For example, fly ash is a byproduct of making electricity from coal, and that fly ash can be blended with cement and used in urban construction. You can take slag from steel factories, and you can use that in cement. So there's a lot of opportunities to really systemically think of efficiency, not within each sector, but across the slew of these seven basic sectors that I spoke about. How can we exchange energy and materials across these sectors to create much higher efficiencies? In a recent paper we have on quantifying cross-sectoral strategies in Chinese cities, we found that these cross-sectoral strategies could contribute up to 36% of all your single-sector strategies. So all the things that a nation can do at the national level, like setting standards for buildings and industries, cities' cross-sectoral opportunities had potential to contribute from 15 to up to 36% of everything that national policies could do. So it's a huge deal.
Can you speak more to the benefit of cross-sector strategies and working together versus single-sector strategies?
Fundamentally, it begins with urban form, which is sort of the physical fabric of your urban area. And you want to always begin with a compact urban form, because if you've already created sprawl, you've limited the opportunities for these co-located activities to leverage each other. And this is actually very similar to why cities are great places for economic development. Cities are wonderful for economic development because people can meet and collaborate and get new ideas. And, you know, that's how innovation happens in cities. But there's also opportunity to leverage physically if your urban form is compact. So right off the bat, you get improvements in transportation. You don't travel as much. So this is a synergy. You also, if you have multi-story buildings in a compact form, you reduce energy use in your buildings, you reduce material use for your infrastructure. And then the third layer on top of that is to layer these cross-sector exchanges through, for example, district energy systems. They're one of the most powerful opportunities to be thinking of physically taking waste heat. And, you know, your listeners may be interested to know that waste heat can travel, particularly low-grade waste heat can travel as much as 30 kilometers from the fence line of an industry to buildings in a city. So that's quite a bit of distance, and be efficiently and economically reused for heating and cooling. And of course, the fourth strategy is to use waste materials, waste food. In another effort, we showed converting waste food in urban areas. You should, of course, always reduce food wastage and make sure that food is not wasted. But if it is, converting waste food to energy is one of the most powerful strategies to influence the food system. So cities really have these opportunities to build compact urban form to begin with, have efficiency within single sectors. You always want to do that first. And then you can look at the remaining waste heat that comes out of these industries and think of opportunities of matching. How can I match this type of heat with this type of use for that heat? And lastly, exchange materials as well. You get a city that's using principles from biology. This is what nature does. It's called symbiosis. It's called urban industrial symbiosis. Nature is incredibly efficient. And what you see in nature is what we might learn to do in cities, actually eliminating the concept of waste and thinking of waste as resource. Your resource, your waste is my resource. And how can we intelligently think of cities and urban infrastructures that symbiotically build systemic efficiency?
What type of policy support and resources could enhance the ability of cities to take such actions?
So I think first and foremost, we want to make sure that cities are also at the table in talks like the Conference of Parties, because the actions that cities can take are distinct. They have policies and regulations that only they can do. And so to elevate the role of cities in international fora that discuss carbon mitigation is extremely important. The second thing would be to really think more about urban planning from the perspective of cross-sector interactions. That there's many reasons to think of developing compact cities, and these types of efficiencies not only save money, they also have co-benefits. And some of them could be reducing carbon emissions, but also you could have health benefits because you're reducing air pollution from dirty cook stoves or dirty boilers, which in the case of district energy would go away. And I think the third large policy learning is to really think of financing. How do we finance these new types of infrastructure? And how do we set up maybe multi-level financing strategies to help cities get some of these win-win infrastructure designs actually in play?
Well, thanks so much again for talking with us about the importance of cross-sector urban infrastructure planning. In the next episode, we'll talk about the science of assessing local health benefits of carbon mitigation strategies. Thank you for listening to another podcast from Civios, an initiative of the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. To learn more about this segment, please visit civios.umn.edu.